Okay, we'll put this on pause right now. Okay, today we are going to basically take a travel log, and I gave you a handout that contains some of the information, not all of it. But it's important as we look at these 7 weeks that begin with the day of the wave sheaf offering in the time of the unleavened bread, that we are to count 49 days, and then the 50th is the day of Pentecost, or to count 7 weeks. In order to understand the lessons we are to learn from the day of Pentecost, it is vital to understand the history of the first Pentecost, the history of the travels of the people of Israel between the land of Egypt and Mount Sinai, and the events that took place there 4 days after they arrived. I want to begin in Leviticus chapter 23. We will have a few scriptures here ahead of time. Most of you are familiar with Leviticus 23 and verse 15, which says, "You shall count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath." So this is the only holy day that is not a calendar day. It is not the first of Sivan. It's not the third of Ab. It is a day that they are to count from the day after the wave sheaf. And the wave sheaf day would vary yearly because the wave sheaf day was the Sunday, the first day of the week, immediately following whatever weekly Sabbath was contained in the 7 days of unleavened bread. And as you know, there are 7 days of unleavened bread, not eight, so only one of them can be a Sunday. A Sabbath. So we have the Sabbath, also Sunday, that's true also. But let's continue here. It says, "From the day that you brought the sheaf of the wave offering, 7th Sabbath shall be complete." So as the barley began to be ripening and harvested, barley was the earliest crop of the year that they could partake of, and they would sow their seed after the Feast of Tabernacles, and it was kind of like a winter wheat type crop, that the very first barley harvested would be put into a pot called an omer. It's about the size of perhaps half a gallon or so. It's not large. And that would be given as it would be weighed before the Lord to thank God for his blessings that year, for the rain in due season, for the peace, and for all that he had blessed Israel with. And once that wave sheaf offering was given, then everyone could partake of the rest of the harvest, and they could have their first fresh food of the year. So Jesus Christ was the first to be offered to God the Father as a resurrected God being. And that, of course, after he was accepted, then that was open to all the rest of the family of mankind. Verse 16, count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath. Notice the Sabbaths were important. And as these weeks were counted, the first of the weeks was a Sunday during unleavened bread. The second of the weeks was the following Sunday. The third was the third Sunday, and so on, fourth, fifth, down to what was called the seventh of the weeks, or the seventh of the counting. That's why Pentecost is also called the Feast of Weeks. And then, of course, the Feast of First Fruits. It's the only holy day that actually, in the Bible, has four different names. So it says, "You shall bring from your dwellings 2 wave loaves of 2/10 of an ephah," so 2 fairly small loaves of bread, "and they shall be of fine flour, and they shall be baked with leaven." The only offerings given with leaven were the ones given on the day of Pentecost, symbolizing that it did cover people who still have sins and still have shortcomings, that we are offering ourselves to God, as it says in Ephesians, as a living sacrifice. Now let's go over to a phrase that is very problematic in the New Testament. Let's go over to Matthew chapter 28. When you read the phrase, the first day of the week in the New Testament, and by the way, it occurs 8 times. It never means the first day of the week as in Sunday. The word day is always in italics, which means it is not in the original. And the word weeks, week is always plural as in weeks. So even in the New Testament, they understood clearly the counting of the 7 Sabbaths from the day of wave sheaf until the day of Pentecost. And this period of these 7 weeks' time, I know there are some Jewish traditions and some things you will find that are based on speculation. You'll find them in certain commentaries and historical books. But, you know, they are of men. They are not of God. They're not in his word. But it is important that you understand in the New Testament, As it says here in Matthew 28 and verse 1, "Now after the Sabbath, as it began to be the first of the weeks," so Sabbatismos in plural, and day is not there. So this is simply saying the wave sheaf day, the day of the wave sheaf offering, the day they began counting the 7 weeks to Pentecost. Now, it certainly was a Sunday because it was the day after the Sabbath, but it was not a Sunday in the sense of, oh, that's a new day we should be meeting for church. The phrase also occurs in Mark chapter 16 and verse 2, Mark 16 and verse 9, Luke 24 and verse 1, all referring to this same day, the day right after Jesus Christ was resurrected. Let's go over to John 20. This is slightly different application of it, but it does mean exactly the same day. John chapter 20 and verse 1. "Now on the first of the weeks, Mary Magdalene went to the tomb early while it was still dark." So in the dark portion of that wave sheaf offering day, it was nighttime, and she went to the tomb and found that the stone had been taken away. So this shows that the wave sheaf offering day, the first of the weeks, began at sunset, not at sunrise. It is mentioned two additional times in the New Testament, and both of these are used by those who would like to meet on a different day of the week to justify not honoring God's Sabbath, but instead in meeting on the day of their choice. Acts chapter 20 and verse 7 is one. Acts chapter 20 and verse 7 is when Paul is getting ready to go down to Jerusalem to fulfill his Nazarite vow, but also to see those who were in Jerusalem and report to them what God had done through him during his journeys, what the commentators call the missionary journey. Actually, it's just a mission or a job he went on that God sent him on, but it's not necessarily wrong to say missionary journey, but he was coming back from his tour of Macedonia and parts of areas. Oh, we know that he had established churches, Ephesus, Corinth, other places. Acts chapter 20 and verse 7 says, "On the first of the weeks," so this was the first day of the wave sheaf, "when the disciples came together to break bread," so they had a meeting together, they came to eat, "Paul is ready to depart the next day, spoke to them and continued his message until midnight. And it mentions in verse 6, we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread." So here we have a days of unleavened bread setting, and again, it is also mentioned as the first of the weeks. So also go to 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 2. This is concerning a collection for the saints in Judea who were needy because of a drought. And I know we've all been praying for a drought for about 5 months. Maybe we'll have a week or so of a drought. But at any rate, there was a drought in Judea, and Paul wrote to the people in Corinth that if they would collect their things that they were gathering, that he would stop by on the way down to Ephesus and take them to Judea with him. Chapter 16, verse 1, "Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, so I do to you. On the first of the weeks," in other words, it was a Sunday, the day of the wave sheaf, it was not a Sabbath, but he said, "on the first of the weeks, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come." So Paul did not want to go through Corinth. He was in a hurry. He was traveling. He did not want to go through there and have to stop and wait till everybody got their boxes ready and their various containers filled with food and wheat, various things to go to Judea. So he said, "When I come, whoever you approve by your letters, I will send to bear your gift to Jerusalem." So he's simply saying, "I will be there." So before that, on the first of the weeks of the day of the wave sheaf offering, just keep things organized, I suppose. Let's all gather together on that day and put those things into the containers so that I can pick them up when it's time to go. So with that background, that we are talking about a very important 7 day or 7 week cycle, I want you to look at this PowerPoint presentation I've got here to understand their chronology. And this is sort of like a travelogue. We're going to be following the people of Israel as they have left Egypt. By the way, the border of Egypt was the Red Sea. So when they went through the Red Sea was the day they actually left Egypt. And that, of course, as you know, was in the nighttime portion of the last day of unleavened bread. So we begin our story basically in about 1486 B.C., along in that range, 1460 to 1486, on the last day of unleavened bread. So we're talking about here, we have this, I hope you can see this, Passover is on the 14th, and then on the 15th of Abib, Israel began to leave Egypt. And they began to, you know, travel from west to east and crossed Egypt over towards the Red Sea. In Exodus chapter 12, beginning in verse 29, just mentions, it came to pass at midnight, the Lord struck all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh who sat on his throne to the firstborn of the captives who were in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of the livestock. And so they then began to leave the next evening. It took them a day, basically, after the sun came up. They were able to go out of their houses and begin to organize. They spoiled the Egyptians, and then they left their land, left the land of Egypt in haste. Verse 37 says, the children of Israel journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot besides women and children. So quite a large number of people, probably numbering total around 200 or about 2 million people. So this is the verses here in Exodus we just read. Pharaoh called Moses, and verse 34 said the people took their dough before it was leavened, and having their netting bowls, put their clothes on their shoulders, and they journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot. So we have the beginning of this time when they're leaving Egypt. It is not yet the wave sheaf offering day, but we are getting very close. So they left Egypt, and then there was a weekly Sabbath. Now, in this chart that we've done, and I have to credit Joe Jacoby for putting this together for me, the Sabbaths are basically marked in blue. And on this journey for 7 weeks, how we know where they went is because when it says they rested or they came to a campground, they encamped. That was on the Sabbaths. They were basically moving for most of the time, the other 6 days of the week. So if we go through the chronology here, which is kept for us in Numbers 33 and in Exodus for about four chapters, when it says they came and camped at a certain place, that almost certainly means a Sabbath. They kept a Sabbath camping there. And of course, they really didn't understand what it was until Exodus 16, and we had this coming of the manna. But for right now, we have Passover, unleavened bread. They left here. Passover, unleavened bread began. Then they had, this is Thursday, Friday, they had a Sabbath. And the 18th of Ab becomes the first of the weeks. So first of the weeks is, they would have been camping here somewhere out in the Sinai Peninsula or somewhere out there in the wilderness. Then they had the time of the wave sheaf, which was the 18th of Ab. Then the 22nd over here is the last day of unleavened bread. So you probably can count that. They left Egypt. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So the last day of unleavened bread was the day that they crossed through the Red Sea. I hope that's not too hard to figure out, but let's continue here. Exodus chapter 14 and verse 9. It says, the Egyptians pursued them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen and his army, and overtook them camping by the sea besides Phi-Hahiroth and before Baal-Zephon. Now, if you look at the commentaries on these two places, basically it's kind of where two mountain ranges come down to the shore, and there is sort of a wedge where we have this kind of ridge comes on one side. Phi-Hahiroth, some people say it was like the mountain of demons or the mountain of threatening countenances. There are several ways that they translate it. And it may have been more of a higher pillar with more of a peak on top. But Baal-Zephon seems to be more like a ridge that came down to the edge of the Red Sea. So there was literally no way out for them. They could not go to the south. They couldn't go to the north. And the enemy, the Egyptians, were blocking their way to the west. So we have them camping on the night before, right here. And they're camped at Israel, or Israel's camped there by the sea at Phi-Hahiroth and Baal-Zephon. When Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. And they at this point rebelled and said, "Were there no graves in Egypt that you have taken us away to die in the wilderness? And why have you dealt with us?" During these 7 weeks from leaving Egypt to going to Mount Sinai, the people of Israel repeatedly demonstrated not only lack of faith, but a very quick reaction to accusing Moses and to simply not understanding the greatness of the God who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. So their story leading up to Pentecost was one of weakness and one of not obeying God, not having faith that the God who had done all these fabulous miracles and plagues in Egypt and then brought them through the Red Sea, that he could actually take care of any problem that came along. And one of the lessons we have to learn for us in Pentecost is that all these lack of faith examples should not be us. We should have more faith than that. So here we are now at the wave sheaf offering. They left Egypt. They had the weekly Sabbath wave sheaf offering right here, which is, by the way, day one, that because we're counting. We begin to count on the day after the Sabbath. So we begin to count, and this is seven, which is essentially 7 days. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven. That's the end of the first week. So the Sabbaths are in blue. So if there was a Sunday right here on this chart, that would be the second of the weeks, which they would then keep. So verse 14 and verse 9, the Egyptians pursued them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen, his army, and overtook them camping by the sea besides Pi-Hahiroth and before Baal-Zephon. Okay, then we have the Exodus through the Red Sea. So on the 22nd of Abib, the Egyptian army was destroyed at break, at daybreak. In other words, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, Exodus 15:22. Then they went 3 days into the wilderness. But let's read first Exodus 14 and verse 27. So Moses stretched out his hand over the sea when the morning appeared, and the sea returned to its full depth, while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. So the Israelites crossed over during the nighttime portion of the last day of unleavened bread. And then Moses stood up on a rock or the shore, held out his hands, and the water then covered the Egyptians, who were up just about at daybreak time trying to get through the wall of water on both sides so they could attack the Israelites. It says, "So the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. Then the waters returned and covered the chariots, the horsemen, and all the army of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. Not so much as one of them remained. But the children of Israel had walked on dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. So the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses." Unfortunately, that didn't last long, but at least for the moment there they did. And then in verse 15, we have this song that Moses wrote in Israel, or Miriam and the ladies sang and danced to, and they were celebrating their great victory. So in verse 22, chapter 15 and verse 22, it says, "Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Then they went out into the wilderness of Shur. They went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water." So the 3 days basically are 1, 2, 3. It would have been the day of first day of unleavened bread. They would have kept on going during the daytime portion. Then they walked on Friday, and then on Sabbath they would have come to the place. And it's 3 days' journey, but basically they wouldn't have been traveling much on the Sabbath. So we have Moses bringing them through, and they went to the wilderness of Shur. So that's where they were essentially camping then. That'll be the next one right here. I'm going to get dizzy turning around like this. So the first Sabbath, they camp in the wilderness of Shur, and they come to this place called Marah, M-A-R-A. Exodus 15 and verse 23. Now that's about where your chart picks up, the chart that we handed out. I didn't have room to have all the earlier stuff on it. So if you want to make, we're starting basically on this chart with day number 7, which is essentially right before the second of the week. So this is where your chart starts at. Didn't have time to make, or paper to make one of those great big ones. But I think most of you know the earlier chronology anyway. It's this chronology through the campings and where they stayed at here. That's a little more complex. Exodus 15 and verse 23, they came to Marah, and they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore, the name was called Marah. So these people were supposed to be learning to rely on God in faith. But, of course, the people complained against Moses, verse 24, and said, "What shall we drink?" Let's also turn over to Numbers 33 and verse 8. As you recall, Moses wrote Numbers, and he rehearsed the wanderings of Israel in this book. And in some cases, he gives us more detail. You have to sort of do a parallel study of Exodus 14 through 19, and then about four chapters here in Numbers. Numbers chapter 33, beginning in verse 8. They departed from there before Hi-Haroth and passed through the midst of the sea into the wilderness, and they went 3 days' journey in the wilderness of Etham and camped at Marah. So both of these verses agree with each other. They went 3 days into the wilderness and they camped at a place called Marah, but they could not drink the water there. So what happened in Marah, let's go back to Exodus chapter 16, was that we have God saying, well, just throw this tree into it. Chapter 15 and verse 25, so he cried out to the Lord. The Lord showed him a tree. When he cast it into the waters, the waters were made sweet. There he made a statute and an ordinance for them, and there he tested them. So God was testing these people of Israel as they were coming across this 7 weeks. Some of the, the Bible interpreters who like to, you know, find things extraterrestrial in Bible chronologies and things, they call these weeks the time of testing or time of trial. It's a little bit different than the days of awe, which are in the fall holy day period. But this time would be a time of trial and testing, and perhaps there is some accuracy in that, because God himself even says he was testing them. Mentioned here that he tested them there. There are some who believe that somehow this tree was something like, some sort of a rosemary branch or some sort of a fancy chemical in it that somehow neutralized the sulfur smell or whatever smell there was in the water. That probably doesn't make a lot of sense, because he had to get water for 2 million people. This would have been a whole lot of trees, and it probably was just simply symbolic that God could heal the water. Trying to find a physical explanation for God's miracles, like people often do with the plagues in Egypt, it's kind of a fruitless journey, because they're miracles. They're not necessarily some physical phenomenon that somehow we could duplicate, even though the Egyptian Janus and Jambres, those guys, tried several times. So here we have them at Marah, and they rebel against God, and he gives them water, says, look, I can solve any problem you have. So let's go to the next slide then. Here we have them at Marah, and then we have one more week, and they go to a place called Elim. So now they're in the month of Iyar. It's important to not forget they left on the 15th of Ab, because we will come to a place where it says they were on the first day of the third month at Mount Sinai, which gives us exactly 6 weeks and 4 days. So then we have 3 days that they're there at Mount Sinai. We'll get to that in a few minutes. So people wonder, how do you know that Pentecost was the day the Ten Commandments were given? Hopefully by the end of today you'll know. How do you prove that? It's not a guess. It's not conjecture. It actually is chronologically pretty understandable. So we have this week here where we have nothing chronicled for us in Exodus per se, but we have in Exodus chapter 15 and verse 27, it simply says, they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees, and they camped there by the waters. Remember, the Sabbaths are denoted by where they camped. It's kind of like church campouts. They're always over the Sabbath, right? Well, that's a bad joke. I'm sorry. But it's kind of like that. They're camping on the Sabbath here, so they're not moving. So that's the first church campout, I guess. Let's also go to Numbers 33 and verse 9. Numbers 33 and verse 9. They moved from Marah and came to Elim. At Elim there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees, and they camped there. So the second Sabbath then, which would be day number 14, Sabbath number 14, the day after that, would be the third of the weeks They were camped at a place called Elim, and it would have been as they were heading towards the east in the wilderness. So they came to Elim, where there were 12 wells of water and 70 palm trees, and both Numbers 33:9 and Exodus 15:27 give us the same information there. Now, for the next week, they traveled, and they came to a place by the Red Sea. It doesn't tell us the name of it necessarily. It just says they came, and you know, by the shore of the Red Sea. So they must have kind of gone, who knows exactly what direction. You can look at a number of Bible atlases, and it will try to give you the wanderings of the Israelites. And they have various places that they believe are these locations. But honestly, there were no drones back then. We didn't have satellite pictures of them. And a lot of those names have changed as the ownership of that land has changed dozens of times over the centuries. So most of what we have is conjecture, but we do know they camped by the Red Sea. And that would be for the week then, the third Sabbath, 21 days into their journey. Numbers 33:10, they moved from Elim and camped by the Red Sea. So now we are at the third Sabbath, and then the beginning, the next day would be the third of the weeks as they're counting towards the day of Pentecost. Okay, now we have another week here, 7 days, and they come in Exodus 16 on the 15th day of the second month. That's important because that is 1 month after they crossed through the Red Sea. They crossed on the 15th of the first month, so here 30 days later, they're on the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt. That's Exodus 16 and verse 1. And Numbers 33:11 says they camped in the wilderness of Sin. Now, why is it called the wilderness of Sin? Well, it's because they sinned when they were there. Not too hard to figure out, but it wasn't because somebody else called it that. That's what it was named after they were there and they committed some of their things they shouldn't have done. So Exodus 16 and verse 1, they journeyed from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai. So they're heading now towards Mount Sinai. On the 15th day of the second month, after they had departed from the land of Egypt. So they're now a full month out of Egypt, and they are going across the wilderness and camping on the Sabbath days. And of course, that's rocky, it's hilly country. Trying to move 2.2, whatever it was, million people would be very, very challenging. Especially they would have had old people on carts. They would have had animals, goats and sheep that had to be grazed. So they would have been very, very slow in their movements. Numbers 33:11 says the same thing. They moved from the Red Sea and camped in the wilderness of Sin. Okay, so here we are at we just left off. That would be day 28, but the fourth Sabbath. This would be here, the next day coming. They begin to learn some lessons here. God begins to teach them about the importance of keeping the Sabbath and the importance of depending on Him for their daily sustenance. This is Sabbath number 4. Exodus 16:1 says, on the 15th day of the second month, they departed from the land of Egypt. And Numbers 13:11, they camped here in the wilderness of Sin. So Exodus 16:8 through 14 is when God introduces the manna from heaven, which is seen in New Testament. It's called angel's bread or angel's manna. But here we have Moses saying, Exodus 16 and verse 8, this shall be seen when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening. Let's go back here in chapter 16 and begin in verse 1 of Exodus. They journeyed from Elim, all the congregation of the children of Israel, to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and the Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they departed the land of Egypt. Then the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. This is their sin. They complained against Moses and Aaron. They had probably run out of food. They had taken these large sort of backpacks full of flour and water, but no leaven, and carried that with them on their backs or on their animals as they crossed the Red Sea and then came into the land of Sinai, or crossed the Red Sea and came into the land of either Sinai or Arabia, depending on where it was. But now they were probably out of food. They probably didn't have many yearling animals to slaughter. They probably had already eaten most of those. And so they had simply their livestock that they needed to keep for, the future, and they didn't have much else to eat. So they said, "Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, where we sat by the pots of meat and when we ate bread to the full." So they sat and dreamed about having big pots of meat. Now, they didn't dream about being slaves. Somehow they left that out. But they dreamed about big pots of meat and having lots of bread to eat. "You have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. The Lord said to Moses, 'Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not.'" This is the second time that God says, "I'm going to test them to see if they are the type of people that ought to receive my law. Should I give them my commandments or not? I'm going to test them and see if they are worthy." And of course, the answer was they really weren't, but they gave some lip service to it later, and Moses interceded for them, and you're familiar with most of those accounts. Verse 5, "It shall be on the sixth day that they shall prepare what they bring in, and there shall be twice as much as they gather daily." So they were to gather for each man or each person an omer, or about like a lunchbox size, a little bowl full each day. And they were to gather twice that much on the day before the Sabbath, the preparation day, and the manna would only on that day last for 2 days. "And Moses and Aaron said to all the children of Israel, 'At evening you shall know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt.'" Now they knew that, and they'd been proven to them several times, but here is one more proof going to be given to them. "In the morning you shall see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your complaints against the Lord. But what are you that you should complain against us, or what are we? Moses said, 'This shall be seen when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening, and in the morning bread to the full. For the Lord hears your complaints which you make against him, and what are you? Your complaints are not against us, but against the Lord.'" So Moses had them all come forward, and he told them what was going to happen. The glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud, and the Lord spoke to Moses and said, "I have heard the complaints of the children of Israel. Speak to them, saying, 'At twilight you shall eat meat.'" So as the sun was going down, these massive numbers of quail came into the room, into the camp of Israel, and simply died. And most of the Middle Eastern quail are quite larger than American quail. They're about the size of perhaps a hen pheasant or something. Not quite as big as a chicken, but certainly much bigger than most American native quail. Verse 13, "So it was that quails came up at evening and covered the camp. And in the morning, the dew lay all around the camp. And when the layer of dew lifted, there was on the surface of the wilderness a small round substance as fine as frost on the ground." So they had birds to eat in the evening. They woke up to manna in the morning. "When the children of Israel saw it, they said to one another, 'What is this?'" And that's what manna means, is what's it or what is this? So kind of like sometimes you go to a restaurant and you got what you got stew, or what is this stew? Especially over in places like the Orient, China, Japan, you know, what's in this? No matter what you ask them, "Oh, no, that's not in there." Well, some have been over there, we'll verify what I mean. Anyway, Moses said to them, "This is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat. This is the thing which the Lord has commanded. Let everyone gather according to each one's need, one omer each for each person. According to the number of persons, let every man take those who are in his tent." Then the children of Israel did so and gathered some more and some less. When they had measured it by omers, he who gathered much had nothing left over, and he who gathered little had no lack. Every man had gathered according to each one's need. And Moses said, "Let none leave it until morning." Notwithstanding, they didn't listen to Moses. So a lesson they were supposed to learn but didn't was that they should listen to Moses and actually do what he said. So some of them left part of it until morning, and it bred worms and stank. And Moses was angry with them. So they gathered it every morning, and every man according to his need. And when the sun became hot, it melted. So they had to go out and gather in the morning. They couldn't sleep in and watch Oprah and Jerry Springer. They had to get out and actually do some work to gather their food for the day. So it was on the sixth day that they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one. And all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. And he said, "This is what the Lord has said. Tomorrow is a Sabbath rest, a holy Sabbath of the Lord. Bake what you'll bake today. Boil what you will boil. Lay up for yourselves all that remains and be kept until morning." So let's go on to the next slide here. There we go. We have
The first day of manna is 17th of Iyar. They landed on the 15th, on the second month. 2 days later was the first day of manna. And then this was the first Sabbath over here before the fifth Sabbath. On the sixth day, they gathered twice as much. Tomorrow is a test. So we have this week here where they were gathering manna in Exodus chapter 16. And as the week came to an end, they gathered twice as much so they would have enough left over for that Sabbath. So we have day 35 after they had left Egypt, and they're then getting ready to learn about the Sabbath. And, of course, some didn't do that. Some, verse 27, some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather, and they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, "How long refuse you to keep my commandments and my laws? For you see, the Lord has given you the Sabbath, therefore he gives you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. Let every man remain in his place, let no one go out of his place on the seventh day." So then it says, the people rested on the seventh day. And the house of Israel called its name manna, and said it was like white coriander seed, the taste of it was like water or wafers made with honey. So we have this bread that was given to them, and there was an entire week there in the wilderness where they were learning how to obey God, because, of course, they had some challenges all the way through here doing that. Exodus 16, 22 to 23, it was on the sixth day they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. And, of course, we read that he told them to boil all they were going to boil and do all they were going to do with that food and then to keep it over. And they had heard, of course, that the people who had kept food over, kept the manna over earlier in the week, that it had rotted and began to grow worms. So they were probably a little bit concerned, but they saw another miracle from God. So now we get into the next week. We were already right here at getting into this place here. The sixth day they gathered twice as much. Sabbath number 5, Exodus 16:25. Moses said, "Today is a Sabbath to the Lord." So we have this day that Moses proclaimed to be a Sabbath because God had told them not to go out and gather on that day. You know, people sometimes ask the question, how do you know what is the correct Sabbath day? And they go back to Adam and Eve and say, "Whoa, no one is around that was at creation." Well, God was correct on which day was the Sabbath during this time. Jesus Christ kept the correct Sabbath, so did the Apostle Paul and the disciples, so all we really have to go back to as far as cycles and timing goes is the first century. And I think we have documented in history pretty solidly that the weekly cycle has not changed since then. But certainly God gave the correct day here when he told them, "Eat today what you eat, for today is a Sabbath, the Sabbath of the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field." So we have that week completed and them in the wilderness of sin giving or having another Sabbath here as they're heading towards the day of Pentecost on Mount Sinai. Okay, now we have, they move from the wilderness of sin by stages. Sabbath number 5, Moses said, "Today is the Sabbath of the Lord." They were already getting fairly close to Mount Sinai and they began to move from stages. Exodus chapter 17 and verse 1, they moved away from the wilderness of sin, and they came to a place called Rephidim, R-E-P-H-I-D-I-M. That's in Exodus 17:1. All the congregation of the children of Israel set out on their journey from the wilderness of sin. That's the next chapter here in the book of Exodus. So they left the wilderness of sin where they had learned about the Sabbath and began to eat manna, according to the commandment of the Lord, and they camped in Rephidim, but there was no water there for the people to drink. So they once again had a challenge with not having enough water. And certainly it was a dry area and there were 2 million of them. So it would have been significant water needs. But again, they once again messed up and they challenged God. They shouldn't have. Verse 3 of chapter 17, the people thirsted there for water. And the people complained against Moses and said, "Why is it that you have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" So what they should have said is, "We have faith that our God will bring us water. Will you please ask him to bring us water?" But they didn't do that. So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, "What shall I do with this people? They are almost ready to stone me." The Lord said to Moses, "Go on before the people
And take with you some of the elders of Israel, and take in your hand which your rod, which you will strike the river, which you struck the river with, and go. And behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water will come out, that the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. So the first time that water came out of the rock, God did instruct Moses to strike it with his rod. You know, go bang, bang on it. The next time God said, speak to the rock, and Moses hit it with his staff. And so Moses disobeyed, did it differently the second time. He thought, well, the first time worked, I'll try hitting it with this staff again. And because of that, he was not able to go into the promised land. So verse 7, he called the name of the place Massah and Meribah because of the contention of the children of Israel and because they tempted the Lord there, saying, is the Lord not among us? Now verse 8 is important because we have here the attack of Amalek. So here we have, they moved the wilderness of Sin by stages, and then they journeyed from the wilderness of Sin and camped at Dakpah and departed from Dakpah and camped at Alush. So we can go over there to Numbers chapter 33. Numbers 33 fills in some details here that are not in Exodus. And it simply says they journeyed from the wilderness of Sin, camped at Dakpah, and then they came to a place called Alush. So they are sort of traveling towards Mount Sinai, but they had to stop a couple times along the way, mentioned there in Numbers 33. So then they have this time here, they have about 5 days where they journeyed from the wilderness of Sin, they camped at Dakpah, then from there to Alush. But here we have these 5 days, they left wilderness of Sin here, they journeyed 25 to 29 IR, and then came over here finally to the area called Rephidim, Sabbath number 6, Exodus 17 and Numbers 33. So we get a few more details here in Numbers that we don't have in Exodus. Exodus 17:1, all the congregation of the children of Israel set out on their journey from the wilderness of Sin, according to the commandment of the Lord, and they camped in Rephidim, but there was no water there for them to drink. Numbers 33 mentions they moved from Alush and camped at Rephidim, and the same conclusion, there was no water there for them to drink. So on the Sabbath here where they came to Rephidim, Exodus 17:8-13, Amalek comes out to fight with Israel in Rephidim. Now the Amalekites were the type of people that attacked stragglers. They attacked the women and children. They were not, as you say, manly fighters. The people of Israel were camping here in Exodus 17 when Amalek came out to fight with them. So we have even today, if you go to Israel, and have in Israel all the people that drive have to stop and pick up any soldiers who are hitchhiking, and especially the taxi drivers, if they take a soldier, as a soldier gets out of the car, they'll say, remember the Amalekites. And so it's one of those kind of historical things that the Israelis today still understand that their enemy is a descendant of the Amalekites. Whether or not that's 100% true genealogically, we'll have to wait and see, but it does seem to carry a certain amount of truth. So here we have 1 to 4 Sivan, that the Exodus 17:8-13, Amalek came out to fight with Israel. Here we are at week number 6, 42 weeks. 6 times 7 is 42. So we have the Sabbath over here, which is where they're camping now. Oh, now this thing. There it is. Where they're camping there at a place called Rephidim, which is fairly close to Mount Sinai. Exodus 17:8-13, Amalek came and fought with Israel in Rephidim. Moses said to Joshua, choose us some men and go out, fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. So the Amalekites came, they could see them where they were camping, and they knew that the next day the Amalekites would attack them. So Joshua did as Moses said to him, and he fought with Amalek, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. And so it was when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. When he let his hand down, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands became heavy, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and one on the other, so they had his hands held up. And as long as his hands were up, the Israelites won the battle, and so that way they were able to defeat the Amalekites. And it says, all the way until the going down of the sun. So it would have been a long time that Aaron and Hur were standing there with his hands being held up. But this would have been one way for God to tell the people of Israel, to communicate to them that Moses was the leader God chose to bring them out, and that all of the rebellions against Moses that continued down through the book of Numbers and for the next years, the years in the wilderness, they were all wrong. They were simply wrong. God had chosen Moses for this, and right before the Ten Commandments were given, he verified it with this battle with the Amalekites. And it says in verse 13, Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. So Joshua defeated them because Moses was there with his hands up. So we have, just to review, we had Amalek coming and fighting with Israel right here. This is after the sixth Sabbath. We have a couple more days. And then we have here Exodus 33:15, Exodus 19:1. If you look at Exodus 19 and verse 1, we'll go there first. In the third month after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on the same day they came to the wilderness of Sinai. Now, a correct translation is on the day of the new moon, or the beginning day of the third month. So we understand very clearly we had, this is 6.5 weeks after they left Egypt. If you look it up in the Hebrew, it says on the new moon of the third month, in other words, the beginning day of the third month, on that exact same day, the first day of the third month, they came to the wilderness of Sinai. And so they landed there at the edge of Mount Sinai the same day, which meant that exact same day, the first day of the month, they came out then to the wilderness of Sinai. Numbers 33, they departed from Rephidim and camped in the wilderness of Sinai. Exodus 19, in the third month, or in the day of the new moon of the third month, the beginning day of that month, after the children of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, on the same day, they came to the wilderness of Sinai. So recall that the 7 weeks began to be counted on the day of the wave sheaf offering, which was the 18th of the first month. So here we are now, essentially 6 weeks and 3 days after they left the land of Egypt and began counting to the day of Pentecost. So now let's look at the next slide and kind of rehearse a little bit here. So we have Sabbath number 6, day 42. Amalek came and fought with Israel. Israel camped at Rephidim, and they came here on the 5th of Sivan, on the first day of the month, the new day of the new moon, the first day of the third month, they came to Mount Sinai. So here we have Mount Sinai, and this is on Sivan the 6th. This is, they came there right after they fought the battle with the Amalekites and won that battle, which is only a few miles away. They were able then to make their way over to Mount Sinai. Okay, then we have Pentecost. Exodus 19:11. Let's begin there. Let's start in verse 2 of Exodus 19. That's where I wanted to start. They had departed from Rephidim and had come to the wilderness of Sinai and camped in the wilderness. So Israel camped there before the mountain. So here they are camping on Sivan the 5th at Mount Sinai. And Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings, and brought you to myself. Now therefore, if you will keep indeed my voice, and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. So it was time for them to make an agreement, for God to choose them as his people, but he is giving them some conditions. You shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Same thing that Peter says we are today as God's spiritual Israel. These are the words which you shall speak to the children of Israel. So Moses came and called for all the elders of the people and laid before them all these words which the Lord had commanded. And the people answered together and said, all that the Lord has said, we will do. This is obviously good intentions, but not followed through with. We know that history of these people was that they went back on this even though they made this promise several times. So Moses brought back the words of the people to God. And they said, he said, yes, they have agreed that everything you said, God, they will do. So the Lord said to Moses, behold, I come to you in a thick cloud that the people may hear when I speak with you and believe you forever. So Moses told the words of the people to the Lord. So Moses is, you know, the mediator here. Remember the book of Hebrews talks about the law being given through a mediator. Moses is here beginning his role as mediator between God and the people of Israel to make this covenant agreed to. Let them be ready for the third day. Okay, we all count to three, right? So basically it's Sivan. Let's go back one slide. I think it might be easier to get back one. There we go.
So here they are. It's day one, two, three. So Pentecost is day three, which is a Sunday after this Sabbath, the seventh Sabbath, which was Sivan the seventh. So here they came to Moses. God came to Moses and said, be ready the third day. You got 1, 2, 3 days.
So it's pretty easy to count then that we are getting to the day of Pentecost. So the third day they were to come. Verse 16. Well, verse 15 he mentions there. Verse 14, they washed their clothes. It mentions they were not to be coming near their wives. God did not want to have any sexual activity in any way connected with worshiping him. Then it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunderings and lightnings and a thick cloud on the mountain, and the sound of the trumpet was very loud. So all the people who were at the camp trembled. Just like when Jesus Christ returns, there will be a sound of a trumpet very, very loud that all the earth will hear. In this case, God was descending on Mount Sinai and announced by a loud trumpet blast. So Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the foot of the mountain. Now Mount Sinai was completely in smoke because the Lord descended on it in fire. Its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. So the mountain is shaking, there's smoke, there's trumpet blasts, there's thunder. When the blast of the trumpet sounded long and became louder and louder, Moses spoke, and God answered him by a voice. The Lord came down upon Mount Sinai on the top of the mountain, and the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up. The first thing God told Moses was, tell those people, don't come any closer because they could die. The Lord said to Moses, go down and warn the people. So once again, Moses is the mediator between the people of Israel and God. It says that lest they break through to gaze at the Lord, and many of them perish. You know, they were inquiring minds who wanted to know. They wanted to know, what does God look like? And of course, had they found out, they would have died. Also, let the priests who come near the Lord consecrate themselves, lest the Lord break out against them. But Moses said to the Lord, the people cannot come up to Mount Sinai, for you warned us, saying, set bounds around the mountain and consecrate it. So Moses said, well, we set a fence around it already. We set bounds, and I don't think they're going to come up. But the Lord said to him, well, get down or away. Then come up, you and Aaron with you, but do not let the priests and the people come through to the Lord, lest he break out against them. So Moses went down to the people and spoke to them. And God spoke all these words, saying, so when the Ten Commandments were first heard by the people of Israel, Moses was at the foot of the mountain, and the voice of God was heard by all the people. And then in verse 19, the people witnessed the thunderings, the lightnings, the flashes, the sound of the trumpet, and the mountain smoking. When the people saw it, they trembled and stood afar off, and they said to Moses, you speak with us, and we will hear, but don't let God speak with us, lest we die. God wanted to speak with the people of Israel directly, but they were afraid and said, no, we have to have a mediator. You, Moses, go talk to him. Today, when we come to God, we come boldly before his throne. Hebrews 11, verse 6, we believe that he is. If you come to God, you must believe that he is, that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So we come boldly before his throne. We don't say, I'm afraid. Can you work through a mediator? Verse 21, so the people stood far off, but Moses drew near the thick darkness where God was. The Lord said to Moses, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, you have seen what I have done. I've talked with you from heaven. And he mentions, of course, some more warnings against idolatry. And then in chapter 21, through chapter 23, he has essentially the agreement that they all agreed to and said they would do. And so the old covenant, if you want to have chapters for it, begins beginning in chapter 20 and ends right at the end of chapter 23. In the beginning of chapter 24, he said to Moses, "Come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and worship afar off. And Moses alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come near, nor shall the people come with him." So verse 3, Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments, and the people answered with one voice and said, "All the words which the Lord has said, we will do." They promised a second time that everything God has said, we will do. And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, everything from chapter 20 through the end of 23. And he built an altar at the foot of the mountain and 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. And he sent young men of the children of Israel who offered burnt offerings and sacrificed peace offerings and oxen to the Lord. And Moses took half the blood, put it in basins, and half the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And he took the book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And once again they said, "All that the Lord has said we will do and be obedient." And he also sprinkled some blood on the people and said, "This is the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you according to all these words." 2,000 years later, Jesus Christ would offer up a glass of wine and say, "This is the blood of the new covenant which I am making with you." And so they understood the importance of the blood symbolizing the agreement, the covenant, and just how serious it was. And so we have Moses writing all the words of the Lord. In verse 19, they had to be ready for the third day. We already read that. It came to pass on the third day that Moses went up on the mountain. We've covered some of chapter 19 already. And then chapter 24, Moses came up with Nadab, Abihu, and Aaron, and 70 of the elders of Israel. And it says, "Moses shall not come near the Lord, alone shall come near the Lord, but they shall not come near him." So Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, rose up early in the morning, built an altar at the foot of the mountain, and the 12 pillars according to the tribes of Israel. And so we have here,
so that on the day of Pentecost, the Lord came down, and Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, and they agreed to it. And then on the next day, Moses rose early in the morning, took the book of the covenant, and read to them, and went up on the mountain. So it's fairly easy to see and understand the chronology of the first Pentecost, that Moses took the blood here on the next day, and they signified it. They had a dinner together, the children of Israel, the elders, 74 of the people of Israel went up to the mountain and celebrated with this. Verse 15, Moses went up into the mountain, and a cloud covered the mountain. So they made an agreement, but as we know from the history in Numbers, and even later in Exodus and Deuteronomy, that they did not keep their agreement. And so God later would make a spiritual agreement with us. Now this is the chart that I printed and gave out to everyone. It covers everything from beginning of the first Sabbath, which the Sabbaths here are in blue. And I didn't print them out in color. I should have on my wife's printer, but she was using it for something else. But anyway, we have the Sabbath days all the way over to 49, the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh days of the weeks. And then, of course, the day of Pentecost on the 50th day and the agreement that was made after the Ten Commandments were given on that day. So there's some powerful lessons for us. I hope you have a chance to review this during the next couple weeks before we keep the day of Pentecost, and it'll help you gain a greater understanding of that meaning for each one of us.